Hey, welcome back in. Hour number three, Dirt and Sprague here, Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube.
Good morning, everybody.
Fantastic.
Got a lot to get to in the final 2 hours of our work week as we send you off into your weekend. Lots going on around the sports world this weekend. World Cup continues. We'll keep an eye on the NBA trade data, see if anything comes out over the next 2 hours. I have some fun in this hour. I got some football stuff in the nuggies, but I think we need to start with one of the most outrageous things that has happened. And I, for one, will not stand for it any longer. And that is the mistreatment of Caitlin Clark.
Ah, yeah, the Caitlin Clark outrage has been loud the last couple of days, man.
It is so funny every time something happens and the dust gets kicked up. This one took the cake for me yesterday.
Sure.
Boomer Esiason, a W fan in New York.
Yeah, Cincinnati legend.
Yeah. All-time great quarterback. Said, quote, if I were Caitlin Clark, I'd seriously consider going to play overseas somewhere and get the royal treatment. She's a straight white basketball player, and she's not being treated with any sort of respect. Now, the WNBA, I believe, if I read correctly, handed out a one-game suspension.
I thought it was two.
Was it two? Alyssa Thompson. Okay, yeah. For the gal with the knuckle sandwich in the throat of Caitlin Clark on the floor.
Yeah.
Okay. So she ended up getting suspended. There was not a foul called in the moment.
No, one game. You're correct.
Okay, one-game suspension she got, so she will be out for a game. Mm-hmm. And it is, you follow the WNBA. I'll check out a fire game every now and then, but I'm not watching the league from start to finish. It's just, to each their own. But I like that we have a team back, and it's been fun to see the excitement level here. Mm-hmm. There is something about her there's almost a Tom Dundon-esque vibe to her in a different way, that the name just causes certain people to react in certain ways as your computer plays audio.
I hate ESPN.
It won't
so
stop.
Much.
The videos pop up automatically. And every time Caitlin Clark's name's in the news, man, you're going to get some sort of visceral reaction. And guess what we got again in the last 48 hours? Everybody yelling about Caitlin Clark again.
There was also, remember, we highlighted yesterday at the end of the show the 30th anniversary WNBA poster.
Yes, and she was not on it.
Well, I saw from, God, who was it? It was one of these media people. It was Darren Rovell. He said that Caitlin Clark owns the rights to everything that's, like, advertised with her.
So any Caitlin Clark pictures or whatever?
So anything used for Caitlin Clark, she has to approve it, and I guess she didn't approve this.
So it wasn't even a WNBA thing?
But the WNBA has certainly bungled, in some ways, the Caitlin Clark stuff. I'm not going to deny that.
Yes.
I'm also not going to deny why the league has grown in popularity so much. She is mostly to credit for it. I know that sucks to say with so many other great players in that league.
There's been a lot of great ones over the years.
But it's a truth, man. My daughter went to the Caitlin Clark basketball game here in Portland, and it was an odd mix of Caitlin Clark jerseys everywhere, but mostly people rooting for Portland. She is the most popular women's player maybe ever. Seriously, maybe ever. That being said, I also, watching and following, I watched last night with the Aces and the Wings, and when you watch the league, it's fascinating how good there's other players in this league and how little attention they get. I mean, even Aja Wilson, who has her second shoe release, she is very popular.
Yes.
She doesn't stack up close to Caitlin Clark in popularity, and she's the better player. She's won multiple MVPs, multiple championships. It's not really a contest.
Right.
But I also find when you get those people dabbling in the Caitlin Clark stuff, so the Alyssa Thompson foul, for example, I saw that, and it certainly is not good when you slow it down. It's also ball loose, bigger woman bulldozing into smaller guard and falling down. Yes. Oh, her fist was on her throat. Have you ever accidentally done anything like that? And you can point to multiple fouls and tell me, it's not an accident, Sprague. I'm like, yeah, some of the girls are being kind of physical. Guess what? It's not great to hear how constantly she's the only great player in the league.
Right.
Constantly.
Or that she's
the only,
one
reason that gets, you even have a league. She's the only reason you get this, this, and that. Like,
right.
I just find the reaction to some of the stuff dramatic, clickbaity, headline grabbing, and I really believe this. I believe 80% of the outrage from mostly white men on social media involving Caitlin Clark is people that don't watch in any capacity women's basketball.
They don't at all.
So, like, I do agree there is some stuff the league needs to clean up and be better at. There are elements of Caitlin Clark 100% accurate. I also find the outrage when she gets a technical foul, she is damned by the league. When she gets a hard foul on her, the whole league hates her because she's a straight white woman.
Right. And everybody's out to get her.
I mean, I hate to say, how many basketball games this season has Boomer Esiason watching the WNBA?
I'd be willing to guess zero. From start to finish, zero.
And she's going to be treated like a goddess in Europe. Yeah, you're probably right. Diana Taurasi was treated like a goddess in Russia. How many people are watching European basketball? Most people are not following that journey. That would be terrible for her branding. So most of the outrage coming from people who I would venture to guess a large sum of money don't watch and follow the league in any capacity. They just see the highlight. They see the slow-mo. They see press conferences, and they, boom, there's the quote.
I also love overlooking the idea that how many months in prison did Brittany Griner spend in Russia playing overseas?
Like a year, right?
It was like a year. I mean, it was a long time.
They're not putting Caitlin Clark in a Greek prison.
And she's got weed. If she's got weed, you never know. I mean, it depends on what country you go to. That was the first thing that I thought of playing internationally. I know a lot of them do in the offseason because it's, you know, you don't make as much in the WNBA, and you got to fill out your salary somewhat. Now, maybe that's changed now with the new CBA, and players are making a little bit more money.
We also have the unrivaled league that happens in their offseason.
Yes.
That's played in, I think it's Miami.
Like 3-on-3.
It's 3-on-3. And yeah. Bridget Carlton, the Portland Fire player, she just signed on for this season. They have big name players in that league. That's a way for some of them to not have to go overseas to play for different countries in different leagues.
It's just, there's something unique about her because not many things in the WNBA will break through my algorithm threshold. I don't ever see random highlights of like an Aja Wilson game winner or a Kelsey Plum moment who's having a fantastic year again this year. I don't ever see Paige Becker's highlights in my algorithm. But anytime something happens to Caitlin Clark, it automatically shows up and you see it.
It's pretty simple. Say what it is. It's white black.
Yeah.
I mean, white woman. It's white media members that don't follow and watch the
league. I'm not even necessarily saying just this reaction
she's
stuff.
She's fouled by a black woman. Let's talk about how the league should be grateful and bow down to her when you're not watching and following the league. I hate to be bringing that up. That's the reason. That's why all the outrage happens when it happens. These are not people who are serious about watching and following the WNBA. And it's okay. You don't need to.
No.
But I also love when people pop into the conversation who don't follow the league.
Right.
And it almost always boils down to what? Who fouled Caitlin Clark? Was it Kelsey Plum?
It was not Kelsey Plum.
Okay. Was it Breonna Stewart?
I can't remember her name, but it was Alyssa Thompson.
And she fouls her, and it becomes this big outrage. You get coaches, and you get players that pop. You get Angel Reese added to the equation. So it kind of boils down into that territory, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's not even necessarily just the hard fouls, too. Like, I get this in the algorithm. If she hits a game-winning shot, it'll show up. Mm-hmm. If she gets called for a technical foul, it'll show up. There's a lightning rod aspect about her that creates a bit of a media storm, whether something good happens, bad happens to her, for her, against her, whatever. Like, she just seems to be the lightning rod of attention in that league. And it's the funny part about it because as somebody who doesn't watch WNBA, I can't tell you how many times these kind of fouls happen in games. I can't tell you how many times this happens to other players. Mm-hmm. And we don't react in any way, shape, or form. You know why? Because nobody saw it. And so nobody's yelling online that somebody got a fist sandwich in the throat when they're going for a loose ball. And there was no highlight that went viral, so nobody yelled about it because it didn't happen to Caitlin Clark. There's just an aspect of when things happen to her, it is a much bigger deal, and we will focus more on it. Mm-hmm. Like, I agree with the sentiment that WNBA should be doing things better to, and could have over the last 2 years, to be honest, although she didn't play much last year with the injuries, to better market her and to capitalize on this stardom. And instead of there's a shoving down aspect of it. Like, Tiger went through this a lot early in golf. Like, there's a famous interview with him when he broke on. Now, he went on to become one of the greatest players of all time, and I don't know if Caitlin Clark will do that. But doing an interview saying I'm going to win or plan to win every tournament I play in, and people laughing at him like, oh, you young arrogant, and there was this like, who do you think you are? Mm-hmm. And then over time, they slowly embrace it, realize we're going to make a lot of money on it. And we'll see if the WNBA continues to follow suit. They got a nice TV deal and players are making more money now. Just funny from the outside looking in and seeing that and the outrage that was sparked yesterday and everybody yelling about it. I did not see it in real time. Obviously, I wasn't watching the game, but the highlight was there. I saw the highlight a bunch, man. Caitlin Clark got punched in the throat.
She's just one of those rare people, I think, in our pop culture sports ecosystem that, like,
she's broken through the mold.
She's separated herself in a way that is always probably going to elicit a response to something,
no matter what happens.
That happens to other players.
Yes.
And, like, and I'll say it goes a little bit of the reverse way, too, right? Like, for all the complaining from people who don't watch the league, who tell her she should leave the league, and oh, you should all bow down and be grateful for her existence, and you don't follow anything. I've seen it the other way, where she'll do a press conference and she'll get a technical foul because she...
She'll yell at, I mean, she'll go at you.
And
yeah.
She'll kind of be a little aggressive. She's a competitor, right?
Yes.
Like, she's a high-level competitor. And she'll get a technical foul, and she'll be in the press conference, and she'll be like, I got a technical today for clapping. Can we rescind a technical foul? Because I was literally told I got teed up for clapping.
Right.
And then what people will do on the other side of it is they'll show her teammate sitting at the podium who's looking at the box score, not reacting to anything Caitlin's saying, and saying, God, they loathe her.
Yeah,
oh, they just hate how much they love her.
Yeah.
And so it's like you get the... treat her like a goddess, and then you get the other side of just like, everybody hates her, she's so obnoxious. It's like there's, it's a polarization in a weird way. What we're seeing politically is kind of morphed for whatever reason into her in that league.
Yeah.
And it's really unfortunate because there's some great players in that league if you just want to watch ball. But yeah, most of the, I mean, I saw the Esiason comments and I started laughing. What, why would you do that? Like, what in what world
what does that
would
do for
that
your
benefit your basketball
money?
Branding right. And anything? Like, what are you thinking?
Playing? Oh, I'm playing in Italy now.
I know
now.
You need to give the take because we need to do the clips in the business. But, dude, if you ain't following the league, you're reacting to a slow-mo cut and what Dave Portnoy's saying, maybe start paying attention to a day-by-day process of how the league is operating and how other players are getting fouled instead of just, she should leave the league and go to Europe. Like, okay.
That get out of here. I did learn this the hard way because I was one of those that would see the things pop into my algorithm early on, and I'm like, oh, can you believe this happened? And then you and others would be like, yeah, it happens all the time in the league. It's pretty physical. There's hard fouls. It's basketball.
Have you ever seen a loose ball and a player fall on another player and then like use their hand to use the body to get up?
Never in my life have I ever seen
that. This is my point, dude. I feel like I see this all the time, but it's like, this is a big deal because it happened to her.
This is the first time it's ever happened in a basketball game. The bar none, the best thing that came out of all of this, I always try and find the silver lining in things, and this people yelling about Caitlin Clark again, certainly kicks up the media dust storm. Without a doubt, the biggest positive that came from it is the Sophie Cunningham pointing video.
Oh, yeah.
So in the aftermath,
forever, dude.
For people who have not seen it online, so this whole, you know, fracas breaks out, pushing and shoving, yelling at each other. Caitlin Clark has a fist in her throat as the other player's trying to get up.
Yeah.
They don't call a foul. That leads to a little bit of a dust up on the floor. And Sophie Cunningham is walking away, kind of getting held back by officials and other teammates, and she's pointing at one of the players on the other team. I don't know who it was, but pointing at him with this, like, hilarious look on her face.
Yeah.
There's an eyebrow raise at one point. And it led to yesterday.
There was a lot of people using that GIF.
Warren Sharp had it saying the offensive line seeing a defensive lineman flinch on a hard count.
Yeah.
Up, right here, right here, right
he
here.
He drew me off.
Me when my wife says she doesn't know where our daughter got her attitude from. We're looking at you.
You.
Dad's when anytime someone touches the thermostat. There was one that said me opening a bag of cheese and my dog. Oh, that cheese. I heard it. I heard the bag. Dude, I'm not kidding you. I spent maybe an hour just scrolling these yesterday because I couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah.
It is one of the most memeable things. I don't know if that's a word or not, or yet you know, it's not even a meme. It's a video. It's like 5 seconds long.
It's great.
Absolutely hilarious.
It's a GIF. It's going to be an all-time GIF that people use.
If you want a silver lining.
Somebody I think used it locally and they were like, Tom Dundon, when the Portland City Council gives him the funding for the arena, and he's just him pointing like,
see? Right here. See what we're going to do? See what we're going to do? Let me quickly, hold on. Now, I think we're allowed to do this because the Giannis thing is over, so I'll just say ahead of time it doesn't impact us.
Mm-hmm. A trade?
We do have a trade.
How come I'm following Shams with our show page, and
you're not
seeing
it?
Everything, and I don't see anything?
Are you on the For You tab or the Following tab?
I'm on the Following tab.
If you're on the Following tab, it should be there.
Damn it.
The Oklahoma City Thunder are trading Isaiah Joe to the Detroit Pistons.
That's a good pickup.
For 2 future second-round picks.
Well, yeah, because the Thunder can't take any players back.
No, they cannot.
Good pickup for Detroit. It's not going to make or break everything for them, but if Isaiah Joe can get his 3-point game going, because his minute distribution in Oklahoma City was interesting the last couple of years. He became pretty good role guy for them.
Yeah.
And then kind of fell out of the rotation, basically. 11 points per game, shooting 42.3% on 6 3-point attempts.
This seems like the perfect kind of candidate that we should have been looking at for 2 second.
Exactly who I was hoping we'd get into,
42% last year from 3 on 6 attempts, as you mentioned, per game. The year before that, he was 41%. Year before that, 41%, 40%.
How many roster spots do we have right now, technically, on our
That is a great question. Robert Williams is gone. Well, not gone, but
he's an unknown.
He's an unknown. Yep. Outside of that, in terms of free agents, are there any others that I'm forgetting? I think everybody else is still under contract.
I do feel like this is a move that your OKC are trying to send this guy to the other conference. So he ain't going anywhere.
No, I don't think Oklahoma City operates quite like that. I just think 2 second round picks is easy, good business.
Well, and they're trying to cut money, and there's something else in the plans for them.
Where was Portland in this then? Because they've got 100 second round
picks right now. We can have a conversation at some point, whether that's today or another point. I think there are absolutely good things we can point to in the Cronin era of roster management. I also can point to a decent amount of things that make me go, what were we doing here?
Yeah.
I mean, a full mid-level for GP2 and then just basically trading him out for 5 seconds because he never wanted to be here.
No.
Seems like a pretty big mistake in how you give out your mid-level, right? So, like, there's that. Then you get into the trade stuff. The Cam Reddish, Chris Murray, who else was it? For Josh Hart, right? Like, and you could have said, we're going to lose him for anyway, but... Like, and then not willing to trade some of the picks for some of the role guys for the Knicks who became hugely important for them. I also have noted things like, I thought personally, and I said this on the pod when I used to do it with Danny, I was pissed off we didn't get Obi Toppin. And I'm not telling you Obi Toppin's changing your circumstance and winning you a title.
No.
Pretty nice little role guy ended up being for the Indiana Pacers the year they made the finals, was he not? So, like,
can we add choosing Elijah Hughes over NKA? Like, good Lord.
There's just mistake. There's like little things that we miss out on that don't always make or break everything for your team that I've been like, why aren't we doing that? We had all these second round picks. We could have gotten Obi Toppin. 2 seconds for Isaiah Joe. Good shooter. Maybe they have a bigger player in sight, and so they're going to have to need to manage the roster. But like, it's little things like that for me that I note, and I'm like, yeah, we could have used a 42% three-point shooter.
Yeah, that's a tough part is that you want to react when you see moves, especially players that make sense for Portland to go after and try and go get, and you don't get them. There's a weird balance of like, why weren't you involved in that? But to your point, I don't know what's getting kicked up behind the scenes. I don't know what the larger thought is about building the roster out and what other guys you're trying to go after. And maybe there's something in the works that is going to solve some of their three-point shooting. Because as much as I loved hearing Mike Anori talk about that yesterday, I don't think just having guys come off of certain screens or shoot with a right step back instead of a left step back is going to fix all of your issues. You need to be a drastically better shooting team next season. And going out and finding, as Hassan Whiteside would say, shooters is a big deal of that. Mm-hmm. So I'm not I don't want to be too critical because I don't know what the rest of the plan are, but I do think there's that seems like in the moment as we react to it in real time, unsure of what is still to come, a missed opportunity in Detroit. That's a great trade. They needed offensive help like hell. It's only 2 second round picks. They're still in play for larger things. Mm-hmm. Maybe a Jaylen Brown is heading to Detroit. Like that's one of the guys or one of the teams that is reportedly trying to go after
they
him.
They clearly are in on trying to get whoever that ball handling playmaker,
yes,
secondary to Cade is going to be. They clearly have opened up the cap space and room for it.
And if you have a ball handler who's going to get blitzed and double teamed, what is it great to surround him with?
Kick out shooter.
Yeah. Guy who shoots 42%. So we'll see if anything else comes out of the NBA. Maybe carry that over a little bit on the other side. We're back after this. 105.1 FM The Fam. Well, I might be on the brink of yelling. We'll get to that in a moment.
You going to yell about Caitlin Clark?
Yeah, I'm outraged, dude.
Do you know? So this is a funny admission. So in, I'm a radio person. I love radio.
Yeah.
And when I'm in the car, I just have the fan on. I'm always going to be a P1 of the fan, right? Have been forever.
Absolutely.
So about a year or so ago, I'd be in the car and I'd have to pick up my kids from school and then run some errands. And it would always just happen to line up with primetime playing the Caitlin Clark is white Stephen A. Smith drop.
Right.
And about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, my youngest, one day we're just in the backseat driving, and we're not talking, and she just goes, Caitlin Clark is white. But she does it
enough
with like a British accent.
Oh, okay, she went British with it.
She didn't try to. She was trying to mimic Stephen A, but in doing that, she made it more British. Anyways, we've been joking about this for 2 years. She goes to the Caitlin Clark game. And I bring her in because she has an Indiana Fever Stranger Things jersey.
Her having a shirt that says Caitlin Clark is white would have been glorious.
I go, hey, it's funny for us because we get where it's coming from.
Inside joke.
Don't go to the arena and just start yelling, Caitlin Clark is white.
Every time she makes
with
a
your
bucket.
British accent. And she goes, why? And I was like, I'll explain it to you later.
Yeah.
Just don't do it.
Please don't do that
in
public.
And when she came back, I go, did you say it? And she goes, I didn't say it. I was like, good job.
Okay, we're good.
Because out of context.
That doesn't make any sense.
A random kid just going, Caitlin Clark is white.
That's Alex Crawford at a Dodger game yelling, milk me, mommy. Yeah. Not everybody in the section's going to get it. That's going to make some people turn their heads.
Milk me, mommy, and hit me, daddy. Still one of the more awkward things I've ever sat next to in my entire life.
At
a very, potentially problematic area.
Yeah, it's not a great thing to yell at a ball game. Now, fair point in the fan text line. Isaiah Joe traded. That just happened about 15 minutes ago. If the Thunder didn't want to take a player back, the Blazers don't have any cap space, how do you propose they trade for him?
That was my whole point.
I mean, it's totally fair. It's not necessarily just about Isaiah Joe. It's about the idea of, and again, there's a difficulty here because the NBA season ends. Ours has been over for quite some time, and we've all been sitting around like twiddling our fingers and thumbs waiting for something to happen. When's a move going to take place? When's a trade? We didn't have any picks in the draft, so it's a unique year in that regard. Like, even if you have a second round pick, we're still stupid enough to care about that. Oh, who do we get with the 48th pick? Like, who's the guy we got? Oh, we played here. Like, we find a way. Ryan Rupert projects as, like, we do that thing. So we've just been in this weird spot where we've been sitting and waiting. Free agency hasn't even opened up yet. Now, you can trade players. We're about, 6 days away, I think, from free agency opening up, 5 days, whatever it is. Not having anything happen to our roster so far has me on an uneasy feeling. And I know that's dumb because there's not that many ways that they could have improved the roster yet. Again, with no pick and free agency isn't open yet. But there is this idea of watching other teams make moves and get better and find ways to improve their roster.
Yeah.
And we are on the outside looking in.
Well, for now.
And for now.
I think
yes,
that's the
for
point.
Now.
Like, to that texter's point, yeah, it'd be great to have a 42% three-point shooter from a team that's won a title and been in the fight, right?
But we got one at the deadline last year. We couldn't play him in the playoffs.
We did. He wasn't the level of Isaiah Joe.
No.
And so, like, my whole point in the last segment was exactly that. We have not a lot of roster moves we can make until we make the move, if we're making a move, or we sign somebody to the mid-level.
An interesting thought here. So Bobby Marks put this out, not really interesting thought, but just a crazy number. So one of the reasons people are wondering, why is OKC doing what they're doing, or their bigger moves in place?
Mm-hmm.
They, on June 15th, that was 11 days ago.
Well, they had a tax coming up.
11 days ago. Do you know what their tax bill was?
Wasn't it like 220, or was it 167?
Their tax bill, again, June 15th,
yeah,
$296 million tax.
Higher than 220, okay.
Their salary as a team is 261.
Yeah.
Their tax is 296.
Yep.
They have traded Aaron Wiggins and Isaiah Joe. Do you know what their tax bill is now at?
190? Did they cut 100?
They cut more than that. It's down to $107 million.
And they're probably not done.
They're probably not done. They have cut almost $200 million off of their tax, but when the bill is at $300 million, you still got a sizable tax. So I'd be curious to see where they go and what the rest of their offseason looks like.
It'd be really funny if they went enough to get under the tax, because I heard nothing but how insanely rich and how much they spend. It'd be really funny if they did
spare
that.
No expense in Oklahoma City, don't you know?
The title team is actively telling the fan base, sorry, not running it back completely. We're going to cut certain guys or let them go because we don't want to pay into the second apron.
They're in an interesting spot. Losing the Western Conference Finals in Game 7, one of your big three is cool. Turtles every time he sees the other best player that he's going to have to go up against for the next 5 to 10 years.
It's literally the only player in the conference that he just shrinks against.
Do you go try and get another big? Do you get rid of Chet? Is there a massive move for them? Do they just kind of whittle down some salary and keep it as is with their draft picks? Like, what OKC does this offseason is very interesting to me.
Yeah.
Shams did say this morning on Get Up or First Take or whatever ESPN show he was on, he did say that one of the teams that continues to have interest in Jaylen Brown is your Portland Trailblazers.
Yes, I think we're going to actively try to get Jaylen Brown.
I put up a poll question 45 minutes ago, and this is probably what's going to lead me to yell by the end of the show.
Why? You know this is going to happen.
Why are we this way? And will we ever unlearn being this way? Is there anything that can make us not be this way? Would you include Donovan Klingon in a trade for Jaylen Brown? Right now, the results are 60.9% say yes and 39.1% say no.
Would you say it better not be over 15%?
I said better not be over 15%.
You're
and
insane.
Back-to-back responses on the tweet. One says yes, obviously. The people voting no still think CJ and Simons are future Hall of Famers, which thank you. Great point. And then the very next tweet is, I would, but you'd have to get a good secondary move at center because this basically makes us the Celtics. Is being the Celtics a bad thing now?
The second best team in the
conference? Our lifetimes, have we ever been better than the Celtics?
In our lifetimes?
In our lifetimes.
Absolutely. The mid-90s? The late-90s? Were the Celtics good?
Okay.
Remember Rick Pitino?
I do.
That was a thing.
That was a thing.
We've been better than the Celtics.
Okay.
Do we have more titles than them
no.
in our lifetime? No.
No,
we do not. No.
A team who went to like seven straight Eastern Conference finals and won an NBA title.
It is crazy to think
I don't want to be the Celtics. We've reached that point.
Think about Jalen's time in Boston and if it's indeed coming to an end. Like how many conference finals he's been in?
Yes.
And what is he? He's 29, 28?
Let's see. He is.
Or is he 30?
So his first year, let me pull up his stats, and then I'll look at the season.
His second year, wasn't it the year they went to the conference finals against LeBron in 18?
I believe so. So 16-17 was his rookie season.
Yeah, so 17-18 would have been his second season, and I think they were in the conference finals game 7.
Yes, and LeBron beat them.
Yeah.
And they were the young Celtics.
Yep.
So starting almost there in 16-17, his rookie season they went to the conference finals.
Okay, so
loss to the Cavs.
His first 2 years, conference finals.
Second year, loss in game 7 to the Cavs, conference final, 2-for-2. Third year, second round of the playoffs, lost to the Bucks. Then they lost in the conference finals.
So 3-4.
Three out of four.
Yep.
That was to the Heat. Then there was the bubble. Then they lost in the NBA finals, so made it again to the conference finals.
4-5.
That year to the NBA finals.
Yep.
The next year, back in the conference finals, they lost to the 8-seeded Miami Heat.
That's right. So what?
In 7 games.
6 of 7 seasons now?
6 of 7 or 7 of 8, somewhere, or 6 of 8.
Seven.
The next year, they won the NBA championship.
So there's another year.
And then 2 years ago, they lost in the second round to the Knicks, and then this year, the first round.
So he's been 6 times in his career to the conference finals.
How many conference finals appearances do the Blazers have in their history?
Well, 77.
77.
Like 4 or 5, right?
90.
We didn't get back till 89, 90.
92.
And 92, so there's 3.
And then 99, 2000.
And then 2019.
Oh, and then 2019.
So we as an organization have been to the same number of conference finals as Jaylen Brown has been in the last decade.
That's great.
But we don't want to be the Boston Celtics.
Well, you need a center.
So, go get Nurkic.
Young Hansen.
Robert Williams. The guy who played over him in the playoffs?
You're telling me that the Blazers don't have enough draft picks to go get a serviceable center right. if they decided to include Klingon in this deal?
Yes. We have a full mid-level.
Can I just say, I invested about $1,000 into Donovan Klingon rookies back in like February, March when
Ooh.
He was popping off. Because I thought...
Cards? Are you talking about cards?
Yeah.
Sports
cards. Like ripping autographs. Packs. Well, because I sold some older stuff and I'm like, all right, what's a young kid I want to invest in? I thought Klingon was highly undervalued on the collector's market and regular season numbers showed true. I mean, he really played well.
Playoffs, he had a great year this year.
Yeah, he embarrassed himself. But guess what? That still happens with young players. Okay, if they decide to use his regular season as a jumping off point to include him in a trade, let's do that. Mm. Do you not want to win now?
Right.
I am sick of caring about the 2031
right.
Portland Trailblazers. I'm tired of it.
I saw a takeaway the other day. I think it was from Nate Jones, Dame's guy, who's pretty active on social media, and he'll talk about the roster from time to time. And anytime he shares a thought, I'm always curious what he says because I know he's close friends with Damian Lillard. So if he's supportive of something or defending something, I'm always like, oh, okay. That's like one of the things he tweeted the other day after Giannis finally got traded was Giannis was never going to sign an extension in Portland. I don't know where this narrative came from that he was. And if Nate Jones is saying that, I'm going to go ahead and buy into that he has the ear of Damian Lillard and that Lillard told him like, yeah, man, we tried. I would love to have him here, but he wasn't going to sign an extension. And he already did the thing that we've had to do for a lot of years as Blazer fans. And it's funny that Klingon is now in the forefront of this conversation. I'm not saying Donovan Klingon sucks. I'm not saying I want to give up on Donovan Klingon and he's terrible. The idea of trading him for a guy who's top 5 in MVP voting, I would absolutely do that move. But it was basically, if the Blazers don't make any big moves, you know what the biggest thing that they need to lean on next season is? Internal development from Donovan Klingon. And how many times does it feel like we have been there as an organization where the offseason is like, dude, something big could happen. Here we go. And then it's, you know, Ant could take a big step this year. Is this the year that Scoot pops? Is this the year that he puts it all together? Because
yeah.
if you get that internal growth and development, that's basically like adding a new player. Is Shaedon Sharpe going to be reliable every night that he's on the floor? Or is he not going to care on one end and not try half the other nights and then randomly give you 30 and make you feel good about the player that he is? And it just back to that thought of all you're hoping for in the offseason is internal. We need CJ to take the next step. CJ's not going to take the next step. He is what he is. He scores 20 points per game. He can get hot. He can be a microwave. He doesn't play any defense. He just is what he is. Like, that, there's a ceiling on what he can be. I'm not saying Klingon is there. I'm just ready to not have an offseason where the whole hope is internal development on your young guys.
Well, but it might be that.
It might be.
Like, and look, there's going to be – you're going to hear a lot of noise about how hard they tried and they tried and they tried if they end up swinging and missing on getting a big fish. And I will have to walk back my comments from the opening Dundon presser of my takeaway being that they're going to make the all-in move and people calling me – Charlie Brown and Lucy with the football. Absolutely. Donovan averaged 4 3-point attempts last year versus the 1 he averaged his rookie year.
Yes.
What does that number jump to with Mike Inori if they don't trade him?
It will likely go up. How high, I don't know. Who had the? How many did Cat average last year? He's not going to be to that level. Because Cat had to have been the... Why? Well, maybe Jokic. I'm trying to think of like three-point shooters as big.
I mean, the comp has got to be more Marc Gasol, Brook Lopez, I think, yeah. For Donovan. What's a guy coming in that didn't really have much of a three-point shot, but
right.
Developed it.
What is the... let me look up Brook Lopez and see what his like. What was his career high of threes.
Brook Lopez, if you look at his numbers, he went from like never shooting them to just... Yeah. Instantly
Cat
becoming
shoots
like a,
4 to 5
huge
a game.
High volume guy.
Cat's only at 4 to 5 a game, really?
Yeah, 4.1 last season.
4.1, 4.7 the year prior, 5.3 in Minnesota, 5.7. So this is the Mike Inori aspect.
Wow.
5.3, 5.7, 4.9, 6.3, 7.9 in 2019, 2020.
Yeah. Became a heavy 3-point shooter.
He was a high volume 3-point shooter for Minnesota at one point. That number has now since gone down. But the point is, if Mike Inori is going to be your head coach, I'd imagine that Klingon number's going from 4 to 6 to 7, and then you just work with him on trying to make those numbers efficient. And so maybe he shoots 37%. Like, that's the goal for them when you talk about internal development, if they don't indeed make a trade and get a Jaylen Brown type.
To your point on Brook Lopez, he spent his first 8 years in the NBA, he basically didn't shoot a three.
It's mind-blowing and when you look at the numbers, isn't
his
it?
His last year in Brooklyn, he goes from 0.2 attempts per game to 5.2.
Yep.
4.4, 6.3, 4.8.
And he never looked back.
He was in the high fours, low fives the majority of his career the rest of the way.
Yeah.
And the number, I mean, you know, there's some years where it's 31%, which wasn't great. But there's some years in there where it's up to 37, 38%, 36%. Like, That absolutely can help. Yeah, I mean, that unquestionably is the biggest area of development that he could have. There's also just times watching him that do we ever feel like offensively he's going to be, outside of a three-point shooter, have any sort of offensive game other than offensive rebounds?
No.
And I don't feel that way either.
But see, the three-point shooting is not something I want to just dismiss either.
No, that's totally fair. That's totally fair. Because you want a big that could space the floor, and we saw how impactful that was for the Knicks in the finals, and Cat, and bringing Wemby and guys like that out of the paint.
He shot 34% last year on 4.2 attempts. If he could get that up to 6 to 7 attempts and he shoots 37%.
Yeah.
Like,
that's a good number.
Answer me this then. Because I know what you're saying here. We know
this isn't an anti-Klingon, but it's mainly just so like Jaylen Brown is a really good player, guys.
We agree on the Jaylen Brown thing. But on the Klingon part, we know he's not built, nor does he have the athleticism to be the dribbling the ball, going and getting your shot attempt the way Wemby does, right? We agree on that?
Yes.
So if he ups his three-point averages in percentage and attempts, and he's just a great offensive rebounder his whole career, he was, what, number one in the league this year?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the ceiling, because how many true bigs have a low post game anymore?
That's a great question. Not a lot of them.
Almost none of them.
Not a lot of them.
So it's
like
either,
I can dump it down to Jokic in the block, but he's, you know, he's rarefied air.
The two golds in basketball,
Embiid.
Like from youth sports to college now to what the NBA is, there are two what coaches would call gold medals, okay? To use Alex Sarama's term, the head coach of the Fire. There's two golds. The two golds are open looks from three at the rim shots.
Yes.
The mid-range, back to the basket, low post. I'm not saying there's no use for it at all, nor is there ever going to be a player to never have a low post game. It's largely in that silver, medal, bronze category, I think, for most coaching systems.
That's fair, yeah.
Get the low post right at the rim. Put back
high efficiency
dunk,
around the hoop,
or get an open three. Yeah. Those are your two gold medals that these coaches are preaching now in basketball. And if Donovan becomes that, he becomes exactly what the game is. I don't ever foresee him really having much to a back to the basket type game.
Let me throw centers at you. Because you watch all these guys much closer than I do. Jokic, obviously, like, he shoots threes. He averaged 4.5 per game,
unicorn.
But he can do whatever.
He's an exception to all.
Şengün.
Şengün has a little bit of a low post game. He's not awful.
Less than 2 threes a game. He's not a prolific shooter.
I also just watched him be awful in the playoffs against a Laker team that only had LeBron.
Very fair. Bam. Bam's kind of a, he's more of a mid-range.
You mean second highest regular season point scorer in history?
Dude, this is kind of blowing my mind.
Yeah.
And I should have known this. Maybe they all came in one game and it's skewing his stats.
Yeah.
Did you know that Bam attempted, in terms of centers, you know, classified centers in the NBA?
He's an undersized center, but yes.
The second most three-point attempts per game.
What did I just say?
That's shocking to me.
That's the sport.
Oh, I know it is.
The gold medal of the sport is at the rim.
Nas Reed was
three.
One, yeah. Nas Reed, 5.8.
Another great one.
And then Bam Adebayo, 5.5.
So Jokic is kind of an exception.
Yes.
Anthony Davis, when he's healthy, can have a back-to-the-basket, but when we're talking back-to-the-basket, we're all thinking of the prime guys from
thinking
the
of,
90s.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of these other guys, though, like Durant. Durant's not a three-point shooter, but he's not an offensive
Who
guy.
Who struggled in the playoffs?
Right.
He
Evan Mobley.
Didn't no impact.
Right? He takes 3 a game. Cat, we know, shoots a bunch. Vucevic, Boston, Chicago, four threes a game.
Dirt, I don't know if they will include Donovan if it ever gets to that, okay? And you can laugh at them, the idea of them even getting Jaylen Brown. I totally get it.
Yes.
But if they do not trade Donovan Clingan, it is abundantly clear Mike Anori, like, if he hasn't already, Donovan, start spotting up. We're shooting a lot of threes, dude. Your putback dunks are great. Your putback layups are great because you can get those offensive rebounds. We're not dumping the ball down to the low block. You go shoot a higher percentage with more attempts. That's what the game is.
Yeah, that's fair. A little more thoughts on this and some other NBA chatter. We'll get to some football stuff coming up. Final hour back after this 105.1 FM. The Fan. All right, we got a lot to get to in the final hour of the show. Some football stuff in the notes. One big story we haven't even really talked about yet. Probably should have talked about yesterday, and then it slipped through both of our. We both got nutmegged by the story, if you will. And so we'll get to that at some point in the final hour. Some football stuff in the Nuggets. A couple thoughts here on Donovan Clingan. I did enjoy this one. Somebody said, do you think, is there any chance Olshay would have let Mike Anori answer questions about his contract?
Water bottle. Water bottle.
I think it's really sexy.
What did you make of Cronin? I know press conferences aren't his.
He's not the
special.
Most. Yes. He's not the most outlandish personality.
He's looked more comfortable in other pressers for the Blazers.
I would agree with that.
He looked a little. We're just reading body language and tone, right?
Give me your body language reading.
Tired. I think he's tired of hearing everything, the noise. He's trying to operate in a world where he's trying to execute a draft or a trade.
Well, maybe draft. I mean, who knows? They could have thought about trading into the draft.
I don't think they did. Mm. And by the way, we lost Schmitz to the Dallas.
We did.
Who did Dallas draft in their first pick?
They took the Michigan cap.
Oh, who's their coach?
The Michigan cat.
Schmitz, the wonder genius, making that pick? Or was that Dusty May saying, I'm taking my guy who's high-level, super athletic, and knows my system?
I'm still waiting for them to offer us a first-round pick for Young Hansen. I'm still waiting.
Look, Mike Schmitz might have a lot of success in Dallas. That will largely be because Cooper Flagg plays basketball.
Yes.
I literally laughed out loud when they made the pick because everybody could see Morez Johnson Jr. coming a mile away when they picked Dusty May.
Right. Didn't some people think he was a reach there, though? Or am I thinking of a different... Some people think the first Michigan guy off the board was a bit of a reach?
I thought him and Lindeborg were about
kind
the
of
same range-ish.
When
Dustin May got picked, everybody... You could have gone and bet that.
Yeah, he's going to take a Wolverine here.
But Mike Schmitz. Nobody knows talent better than Mike Schmitz. That's all I heard for 4 years. I thought Cronin was interesting in the brief back and forth with Orem, Hyken asking him about trade stuff, and you know he's not going to give you much.
No.
I kind of more took away, even in tone, and even though he didn't give us, I'm like, mentally, I heard it, and I'm like, they're going to run this back, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're going to add John Collins and call this good with
We're trying here, aren't we? Huh?
So that whole Jeremy Grant trade that we heard once again was coming this offseason.
Oh, it'll
like
happen.
The fourth year in a row, is it going to happen?
Memphis wants Jeremy Grant. They're going to get him. It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
For like a third round pick. Oh, wait, that doesn't exist. Okay.
We're holding out for a management spot. We'll get there at some point. And
I
trading
hope he makes
Jeremy
a move.
Grant.
I'd love Cronin to make a big move.
I mean, again, to be fair in all of this, there's a lot of time to go.
Not that
many players have been traded yet. Most of them that have happened have been ones that we've seen. But a thought on Kling and somebody asking, I was about to say, you don't want Klingon shooting that many more, just better, a better clip, right? And that is where I'm curious to see where, because I think your point, and this was brought up in the, I think it was the Freeman piece, and we talked about earlier, the
Blake Griffin.
The Blake Griffin thing in Detroit, where he was this high-flying dunker. Mm-hmm. He lost a little bit of the step. He got a little bit older. Some injuries piled up. And, like, you're still incredibly athletic, but you're not what you were when you were 24 years old, fresh in the NBA. And he had to kind of redesign himself as a player, and he became more of a point forward running their offense. He made an all-star team, and he was shooting the three ball at a high clip. Like, that has been something that's been featured for him for a long time in his coaching career, of just how many that number gets to. But I think to the point that we talked about earlier in the audio from Mike Anori, he's diving into every little nugget of analytic that he can find about how do we optimize the most out of this player? And if it's a skill set that he's developing to get better at shooting threes, mm-hmm. how do we, you don't necessarily need to take it from 4 to 7 a game, but how do we make sure the 4 to 5 that he's taking on any given night are the most optimized looks that we could give him based on the numbers that he's put up over the last 2 years?
I thought for the most part, I thought in the playoffs, his 3-point shot options were not good decisions.
Yeah.
In the regular season, I wasn't upset when he shot them mostly. Hmm. I'm like, though, yeah, that's a shot I'd like you to shoot. Especially if you're going to, I mean, he shot, what, 34% on the 4 attempts?
Yes.
So, Cat's different. Cat is a better player. But, like, if you just use Karl-Anthony Towns, that listener's not wrong. You want a higher percentage. But can you go from 4.2 to 5.2? One more attempt per game?
Yeah.
I think you could do that.
Seems reasonable.
You don't need to make a 4 to 8 jump. That would be asking a lot.
No, especially if you're shooting at somewhere around the range of 35%. Like, yes. I'm okay giving one more attempt.
That'd be great. If you got to the 5 number and you averaged 36, 37.
That's a dream scenario.
I mean, that's a great dream scenario. Yeah. And I'm not saying Mike Anori, you can guarantee that with Mike Anori. I'm just saying that has to be a huge priority for them this offseason, because I think that's a good point of the Blazer fans who want Giannis or they want Jaylen Brown, and those may not be realistic. Hell, let's go Anthony Davis. If Anthony Davis is still on the table for them, Donovan's going to have to be spaced, because you're not playing them together. So Donovan's going to have to be more perimeter-based, because Anthony Davis is not.
Yes.
Anthony Davis has gotten slower. He's gotten bigger. He's more injury-prone. His outlier season shooting the basketball is the bubble. For whatever reason, he couldn't miss from the perimeter at the bubble, and he's never been able to duplicate the numbers. So
something about not having fans there helped him out.
Well, sight lines can be a thing, right? Yeah. Just whatever it was. But going from 4.2 to 5.2, like, that's what I'm saying. I don't need him to go shoot 8 a game, but upping it a little bit while trying to get that percentage up is definitely going to be a priority for the development.
It killed him in the playoffs, man. Look, you're not winning the series either way. San Antonio was better than you. Game 1, he was 0 of 3 from 3. Game 2, he was 1 of 6 from 3. Game 3, he was 1 of 3 from 3. Game 4, he was 1 of 6 from 3. And in the closing game 5, he was 2 of 7. That is 5 game for 25, 20%.
Yeah. Game 4 is the one that I think in my mind I was like, dude, what are we doing?
There was almost a moment where you're like, all right, now stop shooting. You don't want to tell shooters to stop shooting, but please stop shooting, because this is not helping the case whatsoever.
Well, you saw it with Chet, right, on a much larger scale. The tough thing for these bigs, and Donovan is bigger than Chet, the tough thing for most of these bigs in that league, when you go against number 1 in San Antonio, your easy little putbacks, your attempts down low, they're not as quick and willing to do it, because that guy erases everything.
Yep.
So sometimes just his mere presence, you saw this with perimeter-oriented players, you saw it with bigs. His mere existence on the court makes a lot of players do things that they don't want to do.
Yep, absolutely did. Did it to the Thunder in the Western Conference Finals as well. We got a lot to get to in the final hour of the show. Some football nuggies, a big story this week we haven't really talked about yet. I got some fun with audio for you. It's a loaded final hour on a Friday. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague, 105.1 FM, The Fan.